Hey guys, welcome back to the Michigan Golf Podcast, and we are back with a Masters recap, because if we didn't get to talk enough about the Masters leading up to the event, I mean, shoot, there's more than plenty to talk about after the event. So I'm glad you're tuning in, because what a weekend, what a week, what a weekend, and what a champion. And prior to recording this podcast, I doubled back and I listened to the one I put out last week just to kind of evaluate who I was picking to potentially be there in contention and maybe get the W on Sunday. And not to toot my own horn, but I did put DJ out there at number one. So stoked to see him get it done. And for the most part, granted, I got to say, I didn't really go out on a limb with anybody picking the likes of DJ, Rory, JT, Rombo, and Bryson. The only guy that really didn't kind of live up to the hype, live up to the expectations, is Bryson. But shoot, I mean, we got tons to talk about. I mean, we could have tons to talk about. I'm not really sure where I'm going to take this podcast yet, but let's talk about the Masters. Let's recap the event, the week, the patrons, the champion, and everything that is a November Masters, because shoot, it's going to be, I mean, I'm looking at the date right now. It's November 17th, and we're going to be doubling right back around and gearing up for the Masters in April. So let's enjoy this moment while we can. It feels like a bonus Masters, a bonus major. And anyway, let's talk about it. Let's break for a quick ad. And when we get back, let's kind of discuss who's wearing the green jacket and how the week went. Awesome, guys. Welcome back. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, and I was letting you guys cruise through the ad, and I'm trying to figure out where I want to start with this, because there is so stinking much that we could talk about, and I want to give the people what they want. So let's try and dial it in and give you guys kind of what you want to talk about for the Masters. And first, let's kind of kick it off with, let's lead with the patrons, or lack thereof, this week. And you know, I gotta say, I watched a ton of Masters coverage. I watched a lot on, a little bit leading up to it. I didn't tune into too much. I don't really know if Masters.com did a lot of live coverage ahead of the event. I know they used to do Masters on the Range, which I used to love, but when you could just kind of queue it up and watch the guys hit balls and warm up, because I was always amazed and just blown away at the consistency of these guys when they sit there and hit five irons that consistently fly the same yardage and land effectively on a beach towel. It's insane. And I don't think they did that this year, which I was a little bummed about. But as I mentioned in the previous podcast, I predominantly watched online. I don't have cable at the house. And I know CBS is a basic channel, but I don't even really dial it into that. So thankfully, I've got a smart TV. I can queue up a web browser, queue up Masters.com, and just rip through all the live coverage that they had to offer, whether that was broadcast coverage, featured group coverage, Amen Corner coverage. It was insane. I mean, it was complex this year, and it was awesome. So, but in tuning into all of this, watching a ton of golf on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think Saturday was actually the day I watched the least. But I gotta say that the lack of patrons on the golf course, there were moments where I missed them and moments where it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. And I just think that it didn't play as much of an effect as I kind of thought it would. There were some spots where when you're used to watching Augusta and watching the Masters, and you see spots like the first tee box, or you get into Amen Corner down there on 11 and 12, and then you get the par 3 16th. I mean, some of those spots where you're used to seeing just tons and tons of people, especially the first tee, the 12th tee, and then around 16 green. I think those were the three spots that I really kind of, outside of 18 green, I mean, 18 green on Sunday, or any day for that matter, but those are the three to four spots where I felt like, when watching the golf, it really seemed strange. I think for me, 16 green was the toughest, because you're used to these awesome hole locations down there on the middle left side, front left side, where guys are throwing it up there, they're hitting the ridge, and it's tracking down, and it looks like any shot could go in, and anybody could get a hole-in-one on that hole, it looks like. And so to see guys sit there and step up on the tee, and there's no grandstands to the left of the water, there's no people, there's no nothing, and it was like, man, this is kind of, it's kind of anticlimactic. I mean, I really, you try and build up the hype and the anticipation and the excitement of the shot and the potential hole in one. And you're just like, there's nobody there to witness it anyway. There were a few people out on the course and stuff, but not a whole lot. And I think outside of that, I think the first tee, as a viewer, just kind of sitting back and watching it on television, I think not having patrons on the first tee was kind of sad looking. I mean, it's the Masters. It's a event rich with tradition and history, and just to see these guys, the best in the world, whether it's Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Phil Mickelson, anybody. I mean, these guys are all just A players, and to see them tee off the first hole at Augusta, contending and trying to win a Masters in a green jacket, and you hear the guy announce four, please, Tiger Woods now driving, and you're just like, crickets. And it's just kind of, it was hard to get used to, and those are the kind of the tougher moments for me. But overall, I felt like coverage did a really good job of just incorporating so much more than they usually do. Whether it was, there were some drone shots, there were just some really cool opportunities to kind of hear players and their caddies talk, and getting some of that kind of mic'd up experience. I mean, I don't think players were mic'd up in any capacity, but just having it be quieter out there and not hearing the crowds and the background noise, just to kind of be able to hear what the players and caddies were talking about in certain situations, that was kind of interesting and fun. And then without patrons, I tell you what, there were some spots where I talked about it in the podcast leading up to the event that I really thought that it was going to make the course play a little bit differently. And for the most part, I honestly didn't really feel like it did. Again, watching quite a bit of it, there were some of the spots where I thought, hey, patrons are usually standing here, patrons are usually standing there, maybe that'll open it up for the guys. But you know what? At the end of the day, I mean, the patrons aren't in play. I mean, these guys, we're talking again, the best in the world. These guys are looking at fairways and greens. These guys aren't looking at where the crowd's standing and missing. I mean, they're playing their misses. They know where to miss it in order to kind of give themselves the best opportunity with the next shot. But these guys don't care where the galleries are at, because the galleries aren't in the middle of the fairway. The patrons are not in the middle of the fairway. They're not in the middle of the greens. So what do these guys care? So in hindsight, I'm sitting there thinking, like, you know what? I mean, Bryson talked about opening up the landing area there on 13, kind of going through 13 towards 14. But you never really saw that come to fruition. He did hit one absolute bomb on that hole. I think it was on Saturday, if I remember right, in the little bit of golf that I did watch, where he had like 127 yards or something like that into that par 5 to just hit driver wedge. And when most guys are hitting driver 5 iron, driver 6 iron, driver 4 iron, I mean, maybe even longer, just because the course was soft. Course was super soft. And kind of diverting from the patrons for a second, I mean, what'd you guys think of course conditions? Because, again, if you tuned in and watched about as much as I did, or, I mean, you didn't really even have to watch much, but for Augusta National being the pristine and just pure place that it is, I gotta say there were quite a few shots that I saw, and not shots by players, but shots from the camera, where you're thinking, that doesn't look as pure and as clean and as tight as Augusta National usually has it. There were some spots where it just kind of looked, granted, they had the rain, it was wet, but it looked muddy, the turf looked thin, it looked just kind of, there were some spots where it was a little scruffy. And I mean, I hate to dog on Augusta National, because again, they've got the reputation, and they are, I mean, well-deserved, one of the premier, if not the most premier course in the world, and they work hard for that. But I got to say, one of the spots in particular was 10, down to the left of 10 green, when I saw guys miss down there. I think Paul Casey was one that I took note of in particular, because he got off to that hot, hot start, shooting 7-under in the first round. But I can't remember if it was round 2 or 3. He was down to the left side of 10 green at the bottom of the hill there, and it just looked, I mean, it reminded me of back in the day. I used to work at Grand Haven Golf Club, and that course was always wet. We had a tough time getting that course to drain, and so there were always spots, kind of low areas where water would hold, and people would still drive carts. I mean, and I say people because, I mean, players, but also us and on maintenance, and occasionally we'd get the mowers spinning tires in places, and you would just see tread marks and just thin turf, and it'd be muddy, and it would just not be as good as you would want it to look. And I felt that way a little bit in some spots around Augusta. And it was just kind of a, you know what though? I mean, it was the thing where it's November. You know that it's not, this isn't peak season for them. It's not, they had to do what they could to put together this event and get the course into pristine condition. But whether it was areas around, just kind of in the green surrounds and low areas and the fairways. But I also thought, kind of looking at some of the putting surfaces and the immediate green surrounds, the fringe, the, it's like there were some spots that just looked spotty. I mean, for lack of a better, I mean, obviously the course still played pure. The greens still rolled incredibly, which you expect nothing less when you're talking about double cutting and rolling and everything that goes into making these greens as pure as they are for these players for this event. But I was just shocked at the amount of brown I saw. Lots of brown, I mean, lots of thin looking areas. So, and again, take that with a grain of salt, because I'm not dogging Augusta National, because again, they are the a premier golf facility. But I mean, nobody gets it perfect 100% of the time, as much as these guys try and the money they put into it and the time. But there were just a few imperfections that I'm not used to seeing around the track that I got to see this week. But hey, that's the beauty of it, because like similarly to Tiger's 10 on the par 3 12th on Sunday, it just goes to show that we're all human. Augusta National, there's a human element to this. It's not perfect 100% of the time. Tiger Woods dunking three balls in the drink on 12, and carding a 10, his career high. I think it was his first double-digit score on any hole in the PGA Tour, if I'm not mistaken. And the dude rinses, like I said, three balls and makes a 10 on the par 3 12th. And who saw that coming? Not me. But I did see that there was, if I'm not mistaken, there was an opportunity to bet on that, which is crazy. So if you were to put $1 on a $1 bet on Tiger Woods making a 10 or worse on 12, you would have won $1,500. I mean, talk about turning a dollar into $1,500 real quick. I don't know who took that bet. I don't know if anybody took that bet, because I feel like nobody in their right mind is going to be like, yeah. But at the same token, I mean, who doesn't have a dollar to throw down on something like that? Something just totally abstract that, you know, if it does happen, you're going to just kind of raking in some easy cash. I mean, if I was into that, I probably would have seen, hey, you know what, I'll put a dollar on that, because why not? You win some, you lose some. But we could kind of dovetail into Tiger here, but I don't know that I want to go there just yet, because I'd be remiss if we didn't go right to the champ. I mean, and again, I mentioned in the intro to this podcast, not to toot my own horn, but I was riding high on the DJ bandwagon prior to this event. He played really well in Houston. I felt like he had all of the pieces of the puzzle kind of in place, and it was just a matter of staying consistent, playing his game, and getting it done. And I tell you what, through 18 holes, he goes out in the first round, shoots 65. So 7-under, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that was tied for the lead with a handful of guys, or at least a few guys after round one. After watching four straight days of this, it kind of all blurs together. But so DJ top of the board after round one, and then round two he goes out, and the dude just looked like he was in cruise control. To kick off round two, I was like, this guy looks like he was going to put together a performance where he was just going to thump the field. If I'm not mistaken, he started on 10, and when he started round 2 off the 10th hole and goes birdie on 11, birdie on 12, birdie on 13 to quickly get to 10 under par, I'm like, this dude is just going to, he's just going to stomp everybody. He's in cruise control. It seems like every ball is going right where he wants to, and he's making the putts, he's hitting it close, he's doing everything he needs to do to just thump on these guys. That being said, as I'm texting a couple of guys and talking about how DJ's in cruise control, he follows it up with bogey on 14, bogey on 15, and then rides the par train all the way through hole 8 until he birdies the 9th, his final hole of the day, to shoot 2 under par 70, which obviously didn't hurt him whatsoever. But, I thought through two rounds, I was like, this guy's going to open up like an 8-shot lead. It's just going to be stupid. He's going to go 65, 65, 65, 66, and he's going to end up just trouncing everybody. But, you know, as I, as flat as his maybe second round 70 seemed after such a hot start, the dude bounced right back. I mean, the guy had a third round 65. So, I mean, you give and you get. And so, opening that third round, when he got off to that incredibly hot start again, pars the first, then he goes eagle on two, birdie on three, birdie on four. Again, you're just like, this dude is just going to rip these guys apart. But a lot of guys played really well this week. So, I mean, as well as Dustin was playing, as he was up there the entire time, so were these other guys. I mean, you look at these guys like Cameron Smith. He was there. I mean, Cameron Smith, T2, just to kind of step away from DJ for a hot sec. This was kind of a week that history was made in a lot of ways. And if you're a Masters buff or not a Masters buff, whether you know this or not, Cameron Smith, this is the first time in the history of the Masters, that anybody has carded four consecutive rounds in the 60s. He's the only player in the history of golf, in the history of the Masters, to do that. And that's cool. And you know what? I feel for Cameron Smith because he had a great week, finishes tied for second at 15 under, shoots four straight rounds in the 60s, first time that's ever done, and you lose by five. And I got to imagine, I mean, he's probably walking off Sunday and getting in his car, getting in the, whatever he's doing to get home, and he's probably thinking, you can't do anything but laugh about that. I mean, you just had a historic week, played incredible golf, shot 15 under par over 4 days at Augusta, and you just got beat by five strokes. And so at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, history was made. That's freaking awesome. But it's almost laughable. It just kind of shows you what kind of game DJ brought this week and just kind of what he had. And 65-70, 65-68 for Dustin to 4 day total of 268, 20 under par and a five shot win. And thinking back, like I was pulling for the guy from day one. DJ has been that guy where I've always been a fan, but I've never been like a fan. My wife loves DJ. She thinks he's cute. I think DJ's a cool dude. When he shaves his face, it's just, don't do that, man. The baby face is not doing it for you, but the beard helps. But I mean, I always just thought DJ's this dude. He just shows up. He's there every week. He gets a W every year on tour, at least one. But I just always could crack up at his press conferences and his interviews. I mean, the dude is just flat and monotone. I'm like, where is this guy's energy? Does this guy have any pizzazz, any flair? But he doesn't need it because he shows up and he gets it done. I mean, he's wearing the green jacket, so that's incredibly cool. Some of the other guys that, before we continue on the DJ train, just to revisit my personal top five from last week's podcast. If you listened to it, awesome. If you didn't, double back if you care to. Otherwise, it's old news now. But I had JT in there. I know Paul. We texted a little bit over the course of the week. He was pulling for JT. I was too. I thought he could get it done. But you know what? I mean, all these guys, the guys I was pulling for, again, I didn't throw any dark horses in there. I kind of didn't really go too far out on a limb for any of my picks last week. But DJ, 1. Thomas, 4. McIlroy, rebounds after a first round 75 to go and rip three rounds in the 60s to finish T5. That was cool to see. I was really pulling for him, obviously, but after just kind of watching DJ steamroll things, I mean, you knew that he wasn't going to get back into it. And then BK, Brooks Koepka, 10 under, again, shoots four rounds under par, 70, 69, 69, 70, just steady, even keel, T7 with John Rahm. So another guy that I talked about. Kind of going further down the board, and unfortunately you got to go pretty far down the board. Just to kind of touch briefly on Bryson DeChambeau, my fellow Orgain representative who's hitting bombs and all that good fun jazz. But, you know, I mean, for all the hype that went into this event and all kind of getting geared up and Jordan Spieth saying what he said about how it's like this is Bryson's tournament to lose, and I didn't disagree with that at all. Leading into the event, I thought he's coming off the U.S. Open. He's got the W there. I mean, he is hitting incredibly long tee shots, but you showed up to Augusta National and you wanted to hit bombs. And Augusta said, buckle up, man. It's just, that's not what it's about out here. And I thought that was cool. I mean, it's just this conversation and this podcast and this moment could spiral off into the great distance debate. And are these guys hitting it too far? Are they doing this? Is the ball go too far? Is equipment too hot, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, you got Bryson who hits the ball just stupid far, and he finishes at 200 par for the week. 18 shots off of the champion, Dustin Johnson. And so, in my opinion, I love that. I absolutely love it because I don't think these guys hit the ball too far. I love watching. I mean, Bryson's an animal. He is just getting super scientific and really trying to optimize every aspect of the game. But so he's an anomaly. I kind of put him in his own category. He's doing what he does. Fun to watch. Interesting to just kind of sit back and observe. But when you look at the average top level guy on the PGA Tour, the Dustin Johnsons, the Justin Thomas, the Rory McIlroy, the Brooks Koepka, the John Rahm. I mean, I love watching these guys hit it 330 yards. I mean, who doesn't? It's super fun. One of my favorite things was watching Rory, who just, one, I love the guy's golf swing, but I love his ball flight, and just watching that tracer on all of his shots. I mean, he's just piping tee shots. That tee shot off the first on Sunday, when he rips it and carries over the fairway bunker there, he had to put that out there. I didn't see what the number was, but that thing had to fly 310, 315. Just incredible stuff. And I always get a kick out of this, watching the golf and watching these guys that do hit the ball far, and watching the camera kind of pan out to where the ball traditionally lands, and then you don't see anything, and then the camera quick jumps ahead of another 20 to 30 yards, and then you see a ball bouncing or rolling through the fairway. And it just cracks me up, because it's like these guys are just on another level. They hit the ball so stinking far. But at the end of the day, there's so much more to golf than that. There is so stinking much more to golf than that, because maybe Bryson had wedge into par fives. Maybe he had short irons into par fours, where other guys were hitting mid irons or long irons. Or shoot, I even saw some guys hitting fairway woods into some of these par fours just because of how wet and soft it was. But there's so much more to this game than hitting bombs. And I know I love to talk about it because it's fun, it's entertaining, and it's high energy stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is Augusta National. This is putting the ball in the right place, not only off the tee, but putting it in the right spot on the green. So precision with the irons, precision with the wedges, and then you have to putt. You have to roll the rock. And if you don't, I mean, I saw a number of times guys, whether it was just get a little careless or maybe a little unsure. I mean, the green speeds were a little slower on Thursday, Friday. They started to speed up a bit on Saturday, and then they were back to, in my opinion, what you would expect from the Masters and from Augusta National on Sunday. They rolled really fast and really true on Sunday, but there were still plenty of times where I saw guys either just hit putts too hard, just not play the right break. And again, I heard all week guys saying the greens are breaking a little differently than we're used to. It's November. They're a little grainier. There's a little more speed here, a little less speed there, da 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 da. So there are variables, but still, if you're not rolling the rock and if you're not making putts, you're not going to win the Masters. And that's just kind of, I think one of these days, I mean, I've only been to a handful of PGA Tour events, so I've only seen a handful of these courses in person. But at the end of the day, I mean, I just want the distance debate to die. Either I want equipment manufacturers to just cease the arms race that is who can hit the highest ball speeds, who's going to hit the longest drives, but whatever it is. And it's the same with golf ball companies. Just honestly, because we're deviating from the Masters and from the podcast at the moment, but just to kind of wrap that one up, like, golf courses are running out of room. They're running out of space. They can only be so long. I mean, you can have 6-7 sets of tees, whatever ridiculous number you want, to make the game fun for guys of all skill levels. But the 8,000-yard golf course is, in my opinion, dumb. But we're not going to go there. That's an episode for another day. So let's circle back. Rewind. Back it up. who do we want to talk about? We want to talk about DJ. We want to talk about the course. We want to talk about the long ball. We want to talk about the greens. You guys want to talk Tiger? Should we talk T-Dub, the big cat, the goat? what a week, huh? I tell you what, after round one, I was like, you know what? Tiger goes out in round one, shoots 68. Bogey-free 68. And one of the stigmas around Tiger Woods is the dude doesn't break 70 in the first round of pretty much the first round of any event he plays in, it seems like. But let alone the first round at Augusta. The dude, I mean, he shoots 70 occasionally. He's gone on to win a number of times after shooting that first round score. But to go out and shoot a bogey-free 68, I thought Tiger is going to surprise us this week. I do believe. I think the problem came when round two, I think just a little bit of the weather, the way the weather and the way darkness played into effect, because we had the delay on Thursday, guys got off late. So then Tiger had to finish round. He had to finish, start. I mean, it was one of those where I think it was Saturday. Saturday was the day that kind of put the kibosh on things, because he started off his second round, shoots even par on the front nine. Okay, that's pretty flat, but I think everybody went into Saturday, because then he got, I think, maybe what was it, 11 fairway? Yeah, 11 fairway on Friday was as far as he got with the second round. So then they called it due to darkness. So going into Saturday, wrapping up round two, getting into round three, I think a lot of people were saying, all right, if Tiger can get some momentum on 11, finish 11, go 12 through 18, and get some mo going, he could have a good day. Saturday could be a big day for him. But he came out just flat. I mean, very, very flat. The pars on 11, good start. Par on 12, good start. But then he pars 13, pars 14. He gets the birdie on 15, and then pars 16, 17, 18. So you're just like, eh. That's not exactly what you needed for round two and turning into round three. And then round three just kind of went out and was equally flat. Obviously, the guy goes out and makes two birdies, two bogeys. So, honestly, like, I loved watching him play this week. I thought he hit some really good shots. I thought he hit some not as good shots. But I got to say, I felt like he never really had the big miss. I felt like he never really missed by a bunch. He just never got enough going to get him moving forward and in the right direction quickly. It was just kind of too flat, and just maybe that was a lack of patrons. Maybe it was the body. Maybe it was this. I mean, the dude did look stiff kind of going through round three. I've never been to Augusta National, but I know a lot of people that have, and I've heard that that course is far, far, far hillier than TV ever makes it out to be. So I got to imagine being a little cooler, wet, hilly. Tiger had to go in and play, what, 26, 25 holes or something like that on Saturday. So I got to imagine the body was a bit of a factor, but he played good golf, and I loved watching it. Until round four, even round four, I tell you, when he got off to that start, and par on the first, birdie on the second, I thought, okay, he's at least going to get himself to double digits under par. I really thought he would. I thought he could get to 10, 9, and just have a good show. But then all of a sudden you see bogey on 5, bogey on 7, bogey on 10, and you're just like, oh, we're going the wrong direction, T-Dub. And then the record breaker that was 12, a 10 on a par 3, which I found out is called a septuple bogey. So if you've ever made a 10 on a par 3, 11 on a par 4, 12 on a par 5, that's a septuple bogey, guys. So it happens to the best of us, even the greatest of all time. But what's funny is, and what just cracks me up, is this is just classic Tiger. The dude makes a 10 on the par 3 12th, and then what does he do after that? It's almost like someone just sucker punched him, just got him square in the gut, and it's like, dude, wake up. And all of a sudden he goes birdie 13, pars 14, but then birdies 15, 16, 17, 18. So the guy birdies 5 of his last 6 holes, and you're just like, dude, why doesn't somebody sucker punch you on the first tee on Thursday? And I kind of thought that's what happened when he went out in that bogey-free 68. But it's like, someone just needs to give this guy a kick in the tail. Like, he needs to go out and play, like, a few holes before an event and make a couple of 10s. Put a couple of septuple bogeys down. Because if you birdie five in the next six after making that 10, go make another 10 somewhere else. But do it before the event or whatever. But just one of those funny things about Tiger. But speaking of kind of record performances, record-breaking weeks, I mean, this was kind of a historic week for a lot of guys. I mean, again, Tiger makes the 10 on the par 3 12, first double-digit score on any hole in his PGA Tour career. So, hey, even at 44 going on 45, I think, is what that dude is. I mean, he's still doing career firsts. So, still got, I mean, I don't know if he wants to hang his hat on this one, but it's something. But let's look at this. I mean, lowest score in major championship history. DJ ties it, 20 under par. DJ sets the scoring record at Augusta National, breaks it by two shots. Previously, it was Tiger and Jordan Spieth at 18 under. Dustin Johnson goes and sticks it to 20. So, new Masters tournament scoring record. That's awesome. Fewest bogeys in a Masters win. Bet you didn't know this one. Dustin Johnson, four bogeys over 72 holes. So, the guy goes out, shoots 20 under over 72 holes, makes four bogeys. That's the lowest in Masters history. Prior to that, you had a couple of guys at five: Trevor Immelman, Phil Mickelson, Ben Crenshaw, Jack Nicklaus, Jimmy DeMeritt. Jimmy DeMeritt back in 1940. That's a long time ago. Course has obviously changed a ton since then. But I mean, any dude that goes out, you would hope that the guy that goes out and makes only four bogeys over 72 holes gets the W. And so that was more than appropriate for DJ this week. Dustin Johnson also, again, as cool as it was to see him go out on Saturday, again, I didn't watch all of the golf on Saturday, but I did catch the highlights and stuff, and he hit 14 out of 14 fairways, and that is bomb. That was so cool, because it just goes to show, I mean, again, not just hitting the long ball, but hitting it straight, putting it in the fairway, goes out, shoots 65, hitting 14 out of 14 fairways, and what can you do from the fairway? You can hit greens, and you can dial it in with the wedges and the irons. And Dustin Johnson tied Tiger Woods with most greens hit by a Masters champion at 60 out of 72 for the week. So I don't know about you guys, but I don't play 72 holes consecutively that often. But I can tell you what, I don't think I've ever hit 14 out of 14 fairways in any round, unless I maybe went around, which I could probably do, and just hit like 9 iron off every tee. But even then, accidents happen. But then to hit 60 out of 72 greens in regulation, that's super cool. Other than that, I mean, so and I already mentioned Cameron Smith, four straight rounds in the 60s, first time in Masters history. So, I mean, history was made in a multitude of ways this week. I mean, it wasn't just the November Masters. It wasn't just no patrons. It wasn't just COVID-19. It wasn't just all these things that the world kind of has thrown at us in 2020, but it's just cool to kind of dial it in and take a look at the numbers and see what's good. What are these guys doing? Because it's cool stuff, and it's stuff that maybe we don't see as regular viewers, but that was what we had the opportunity to do this week with kind of improved, increased coverage. I mean, with ShotLink and all the stuff that you can really look at these days, and it's crazy how you can kind of look at this data and the data and analytics side of golf and see what's going on, because it's just cool. It's fascinating. I'm a numbers guy. A little bit of a kind of, I like to nerd out on the data a little bit. And if you use masters.com and stuff, it's just cool. You can see these, the scorecards round by round. Like, I've got Tiger's pulled up right now. He birdied 15 every day of the week. That was stinking cool. Never bogeyed the first, which for Tiger, that's an incredible accomplishment in my opinion. Only bogeyed the fifth hole once. That's pretty good considering last week, I think that fifth hole, I can't remember what he ended up doing, but it was not good. But just so much, I mean, whether it's data, analytics, overall stats, if you guys, again, use masters.com to watch it live, they had the My Group feature where you could literally queue up everybody. I mean, you could pick your favorite players and you could see every single shot they hit on every single hole. That's stinking awesome. I mean, I took full advantage of that. I dialed that one in and picked my faves, and I had a long list of faves, but it was super fun to watch. And I think that was, I mean, I didn't queue it up on CBS once this week, and masters.com, mad props to you guys. I wish granted, you can't cover every event, but I wish every major could be covered like the Masters. My only hope for April is that they bring back Masters, kind of the live on the range coverage, because again, I just love watching those guys practice. I mean, it's a seat in the house you never get to get. Not never, because if you go to a PGA Tour event, you can belly up at the rope or sit in the grandstands behind the range. But at Augusta, it's different. It's again, I hate to use the word premier again talking about this place, but it's a premier practice facility. And just watching these guys hit balls and do what they do is just fun to watch. From a coverage standpoint, I didn't watch College Game Day at Augusta. I know that was kind of big, but if you guys watched it, awesome. If maybe it was good, maybe it was whatever. But College Game Day, I'm a college football fan, but I hate to say this out loud and over the podcast, but U of M, Michigan, I don't watch college football this year because they're on the struggle bus and they make me sad. So I'd rather watch golf on Saturday than college football. But what was kind of comical this round the clock coverage, and especially with the weather delays and the early tee times and taking darkness into account. My wife, she was such a sweetheart this week, because I tell you what, I mean, she would wake up in the morning. I'd beat her out of bed most days. She's been falling close behind lately, though. I like to get up and get an early start to my day, but she'd walk out of the bedroom and the Masters is on from the minute she wakes up, pretty much until the minute the sun goes down. And bless her heart for just kind of tuning in, hanging out, watching it in passing with me, and just knowing that, hey, this is one of those weeks. I mean, we've been together for 10 years. She knows the drill. When a major championship is on, when the tour championship is on, when the Ryder Cup, President's Cup. I mean, I feel like I find more than enough excuses to have golf on all day, every day when the events are big. But it was just comical this week to have the Masters just going all stinking day. But again, she's a DJ fan, so she didn't mind bellying up and watching DJ. She loves the navy blue. I don't know about you guys, but the navy blue on Sunday, kind of been DJ's staple for a long time. The dude just goes navy on navy, and I've never been a navy blue guy, but my wife, she keeps encouraging me. She's like, "Hey, you should get a pair of navy blue pants. You should get a pair of navy blue, a couple navy blue shirts." And I'm like, I'm more of a shades of color kind of guy. I'm a gray. I'm a black. I'm a white. I don't do a lot of color. If we've played golf together, you probably know. I mean, I like gray. I like gray on the bottom, pants, shorts, whatever, black shoes. Sometimes I'll wear white, but only if it's dry and not, I don't have a chance of getting muddy and dirty. I hate getting white shoes muddy and dirty. And then I traditionally wear black, gray, or white up top. She dogs me for the way my closet looks during the golf season. She's like, "You need more color in there." And I tried once. I tried getting this like highlighter yellow shirt because I love to wear it. I thought black and yellow would be cool, but it doesn't look good on me. Tried purple. Purple and black, I could get away with. I do have a very nice salmon colored shirt, pink, if you will. Last time I played golf with the guys, with Derek, Evan, and Paul, my fellow podcast buddies, we played on Wednesday, and on Wednesdays we wear pink. And so I showed up in it, Evan showed up in it, but Derek and Paul kind of let us down. But that doesn't surprise me. I don't think that those guys are too into repping the pink or salmon color, but that's okay, to each their own. But that's, again, that's we're segueing off into golf fashion, and I just kind of wanted to put something out there for you guys to kind of conclude Masters Week. I love that DJ won. I'm super stoked for everything that he's got going and excited for what's to come. I mean, I felt bad during his post-tournament press conference. Man, these post-tournament press conferences, some of them are just, I hear the questions that these guys get asked, and you're like, just knowing, being a competitive golfer myself and seeing some of the stuff and knowing a little bit about what it feels like, granted, not to play in the Masters or not to win a green jacket, but knowing what it feels like to compete and play and to care about what you're doing and be passionate about it. Like, I felt bad for some of the questions DJ had to answer. He had to answer some goofy questions. If you saw it, awesome. If you didn't, you can queue it up on YouTube. That's what I did. But if you didn't see it, again, you're not missing much. So maybe don't even bother with the YouTube. But what do you guys think? I mean, again, we're wrapping it up in November. Golf season's coming to a close. I've got a lot more to talk about over the course of time. So we're going to keep the episodes coming, whether it's, I mean, maybe golf fashion. I'm not a very fashion-forward person, but I know my boy Evan, if I can get him on the podcast again, I mean, he gets 5 stars for his daily dress code. So we've been on the golf course a number of times, and he's very fashion-forward. I want to talk fitness. I want to talk nutrition. I've kind of been putting together an off-season training regimen that's, again, during the summer it's a lot of strength, and now I'm incorporating some more flexibility into it. And I started kind of formally working with a new coach, but I got a consultant. I'm pulling the Tiger card here, and the Tiger Chris Como relationship, the swing consultant. I think it was Chris Como was the consultant. I can't recall, but so working with just briefly on kind of some swing overview stuff. So I talked with this guy, got him some swing videos. We kind of talked through, hey, what are you doing now? What are you wanting to change? All that stuff. And so it's been interesting, and I've got a lot of insight. And truthfully, I take a little bit of swing video, not a ton, but I like to dial it in, and I kind of know what I'm looking for and what I'm looking at. But it was nice to get somebody, another set of eyes on it, and to have somebody say, hey, yeah, that's a problem. We need to work on that. We need to change this. So got a couple of new goals, a couple of new initiatives in mind for the off season, which I love to do this time of year. This is one of the kind of the blessings in disguise of living in Michigan. Just having the snow and having to hit balls indoors, whether it's in a garage or in a barn or whatever you got. I mean, I'm out here in farm country, so their barns are a dime a dozen. So if I can get a net hung up in a barn somewhere, that'd be awesome. But thankfully, I have a coach that I work with over here on the lakeshore that has a studio with a OptiShot golf simulator and just nets, and he's got an indoor putting green. So he's been a great resource for me over the last few years. And hitting balls into nets allows you to take all of the feels and all of the technique and work on it and grind on it and ingrain it into memory without having to tie it to a result. And so if I go in there and I just clunk a few off the hosel or blade them into the net or whatever it may be, I mean, it's a net. And at the end of the day, I don't have to go hit the ball again, and I don't have to post a score. So it's a nice opportunity to kind of dial in the fundamentals and then work on making a few subtle changes. So we'll probably put that out in some future episodes. But other than that, I mean, we're coming up on the off season. And then before you guys know it, we'll be gearing up for the Masters. Hopefully, I mean, just Lord willing that this world of ours kind of lets things kind of fall back into place, at least in some capacity. But I think we'll have an April Masters. And I almost said November just because here we are. I mean, what is new? What is the world coming to? But April Masters. So we'll wrap it up in November. We'll get geared back up for it together in April. I'm planning a golf trip with a couple of buddies down to Alabama. I've been doing this for a number of years now, so I'm stoked to bring that to you guys. Going to be getting out to Sweetens Cove. It's a course that I've talked a lot about with a couple of guys that are listeners here on the podcast. One of them I've gotten to know a little bit. We haven't played together yet, but we've talked at numerous events and that we've played in together. And so I'm on the way to Alabama. I'm going to swing over through Tennessee. Obviously, you got to go through Tennessee anyway when you're going south from Michigan. But we're going to hit Sweetens Cove. And I actually had an opportunity to play Sweetens Cove that I had the opportunity. I lost the opportunity. I gave it up. But so, wild story. But I was, you know, social media these days. So Zach Blair, there's an event called The Ringer that he promotes down at Sweetens Cove. And it was just over this past weekend. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He throws out on Instagram on Thursday saying, hey, last minute, I need somebody to fill a spot in The Ringer down at Sweetens. And he goes, DM me if you're interested. So I shot him a quick message, and I was like, hey, I'm interested. And Zach messages me back and gives me the deets. He's like, it's 18 holes this day, lunch, dinner included, 18 holes this day, lunch, dinner included, 18 holes this day, lunch, dinner included, $1,500, da-da-da-da. And I'm like, awesome, I'm pumped. And it's like, I'll totally do that. So I messaged him back. I said, that sounds great. When is it? And he goes, starts tomorrow. And on Thursday afternoon, as I'm reading this, it starts tomorrow. I'm like, Zach, dude, I wish I could drop everything in my life and just peace out and go play in The Ringer at Sweetens Cove with Zach Blair and all these other dudes. The guys from No Laying Up, I think some of them were there. wicked cool event. And so I kind of feel like I let an opportunity slide by the wayside a little bit there. But either way, going to get down to Sweetens in February-ish. But you know what? I mean, again, as I've said from the very beginning of this, the Michigan Golf Podcast is a very fluid and organic piece that we're just having fun with. So whatever kind of comes to top of mind is, as the days come and go, and that's what I'm going to bring to you guys. So I'm hoping I'm giving you what you want. If I am, awesome. If I'm not, I don't know. Hit me up. Tell me about it. Let's chat it out. So Instagram at gsmithgolf, as always. A lot of you guys have been sending me messages, and it's been super cool. I'm sad that the season's coming to an end, and we're not going to be able to get out together. But you know what? 2021's right around the corner, and we're literally, what are we, like 6 weeks away from the new year? So, and you know, in between now and then, we're going to get the strangely warm days here in Michigan. I know last year I was over in New Hampshire for Christmas, and my buddies were back here in West Michigan sending me pictures from the golf courses. It was like 60 degrees that day. So it happens. But if we can get out, awesome. Either way, hope you guys enjoyed the Masters. Have a great week. Don't quote me on this, but I'm going to try and get something back out to you guys later this week. Just not entirely sure what it is yet. But when it comes to me, it'll come to you. So hang tight. Thanks for tuning in to the Michigan Golf Podcast. I appreciate you guys. And until next time.